a pleasure to welcome Dr. Raymond Moody, the author of the best-selling book, Life After Life, and also a former mentor of mine from 30 years ago. Welcome, Dr. Raymond Moody.
Thank you so much for letting me be here today, Chris. I'm really looking forward to this. I worked in a maximum security unit. It was fascinating. I tell you, you can imagine it's like when I was a kid, like in the seventh grade, I used to sit there all day and daydream about each step of a flying out to Mars. You know, teacher wouldn't ask me something, but you know, then I working in that forensic unit, I thought, well, you know, I can visit 15 or 20 different planets today if I want to.
And I've been following this remarkable doctor in Canada who has made amazing strides. His name is Mate. He's a Hungarian refugee from World War II, actually the end of the Holocaust. Tens of thousands of addicts that he has tended to, that every single one without failure had higher than normal trauma.
He may have a different methodology and a better insight, but to me, when you think about addiction, it is such a vast, I mean, there is no kind of one category of person, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
like more that, it's, I mean, I worked in an addiction clinic as a sort of volunteer almost when I was, at one period, I forgot how old I was, but we'd go there to the local alcohol and drug rehab clinic. I mean, it's such a vast thing. It's beyond my pay grade, but I certainly hope that your friend has some insight on it because, you know, it's like I have been through an addiction too. And I am so happy I did in a respect and in retrospect and got through it because I see, but mine was to, like so many other people of my generation, to diet pills in college that I got accustomed to stay up all night, get these legally, and so, you know, you get into the thing of the doctor, but what those were methamphetamine. That was about a 5-year period. I mean, it's such a, and it was little, I used them to work. I had a PhD in philosophy. I think I was 24 years old when I got my PhD in philosophy. So I was just like constantly, you know, working. But it's like I finally just one day I had this realization. It's like I shook myself almost and said, this is probably like 5 or 6 years I did them. And one day I just thought, this can't be good for me, right? And so in that very moment, it was like something clicked, and I never again did it. It's way fun.
Yeah, so you don't seem to fit then the classic addict profile. Maybe you would classify yourself as a working addict. Really, you were functional.
Yeah, I was. That's right. I was. As a matter of fact, probably too functional. You know, at a certain age, and I had 2 doctoral degrees before I was, I think, 31. PhD in philosophy. Then I went to philosophy professor for 3 years at East Carolina. Then I went to medical school. Then through my psychiatry training. But by the time I finished my MD, I think I was 31. And it's remarkable, but also you can both appreciate from me perspective of maturity that there was something wrong with such an individual. Think about it. If somebody came to you with that work, I mean, history, and you were considering employing them, wouldn't you think that was a bit odd?
If I had to travel back in time, I would, in today's world, uh-huh. I'd think you, it would be normal behavior.
Oh, that comes as a shock.
You know, they really sparked a thought here, and one neat thing that while I was reviewing your work, I came across a phenomenon that I've been watching closely for several years, and this is a particular alkaloid that is derived from a fascinating Mexican plant called Salvinorin divinorum.
I studied toxicology as part of my forensic things, and I know that is, I have heard of it. I don't have any experience of it, but I have books where I could immediately look it up, and it's not the same as morning glories.
Speaking of LSA, this is actually a extremely unique pharmacological agent. It's Salvinorin A, and it impacts the mind in a different way. And the reason I bring it up is, of course, your work, Life After Life, and near-death experiences, and gosh, you were talking about that 30 years ago in class and written, your magnum opus on the topic. Here's what drew me to this that I wanted to bring to your attention. I have actually watched interviews of hundreds of people who have come back from taking very heavy doses of this substance. They literally died, not the ego death that we think of with cubensis or any of the other psychotropic substances. You mentioned morning glories. This is completely unique in that these people, I know this will sound hard to believe, literally experience multiple lives and then come back with intricate details of those lives. I believe this is a possible extension of your work.
Well, it is, because I'm thinking, yeah, Chris, this is exactly what I'm interested in. Because, see, my work that I'm known for is not my work. All of that stuff came because of a skill that I have that underlies that. As I said in Life After Life, my specialties in philosophy were logic and philosophy of language. And what I have been interested in, literally since childhood, is how you think logically about things that are unintelligible or don't make any sense. I could show you this, but it takes something to go through and to realize it. But in fact, we can actually reformat our mind to have a new way to think logically about what I call cross-dimensional transfers, like a person who has a near-death experience, you would have to say, you see, they realize, what they have is that they have an experience of a change of dimension, right?
Yes.
And so that would be the similarity. It sounds that these people you're describing have a change of dimension. It's like I've been through this recurrently since I was 8 years old, and I read the Collier's magazine about the coming moon flights, and I began to talk in my third grade class about, yeah, we're going to the moon soon, and this is how you do it. And you can imagine how I could have was received. My dad thought that I was, I can see in 1950 or 51, it's like he was a medical doctor, and I could see he could be a little worried about, since I was doing it with such certainty, So then for the next 17 years, he just sort of would criticize me about it until the actual landing occurred, and then he failed to mention the incident. I have always been like that, and so where I can tell you is, we now have an entirely new way to think about the question of life after death and the whole thing of interdimensional transfer and all.
You've definitely given me a great background there. I appreciate that, and I can relate to much of it. But where I think this could pique your interest, what happens is the individuals black out, and then they find that they are in, as you say, a different dimension. But this is very different from the DMT, the dimethyltryptamine experience.
I don't know much of that.
That's a separate topic. Very interesting topic, too, because those folks are convinced that we live within a dome, and that we are actually captive. We're all captives here in this much...
The Truman Show delusion. Look it up, the Truman Show delusion. There's people who think that their whole life is being filmed, and they get together on the internet, so it's no longer a delusion if it's your cultural norm, right, by definition. You can't call them delusional, since they have a community on
Well, but you could have a collective delusion, though.
Well, you could, actually, but, it's... It is sort of challenged because the standard definition of a delusion is a false belief which cannot be corrected by a rational process, which is inconsistent with a person's culture. To you or me, if we went to the doctor complaining, saying that Haile Selassie of Ethiopia is God, and, that would be delusional. But if you go down to Jamaica, that's more of a norm.
Yes.
It depends. So the technical definition has to do with that culture. But on an internet, that undermines that, right, see, because people can get together in a community and what we'd have had to call by the standards of 1980 a delusion. It would now be a shared cultural.
Completely see your point, but I could offer a counter view here. If we look at this a little more closely, you could have a delusional group of people who are literally delusional. Nevertheless, they have formed a group.
Well, I can think of a vibrant example on the TV show right now as I'm watching there. It's with the mute button in it. But, I mean, I think that about a third of our present American population is going through such an experience as you're describing right now.
Yeah.
This is a collective delusion if there ever has been one.
That may be a topic for another day. Could I revisit, though, the Salvia Divinorum for just one moment?
Yeah, sure.
Because where I think this ties in, just the next logical extension of life after life. That's the reason why I wanted to just maybe examine it a bit further.
I think so, too. Absolutely.
It could be, and here's why. What appears to happen with this substance, Doctor, unlike any other substance, the portion of the brain appears to, let's say, not create consciousness, but hold on to or grasp it. In other words, you might think of it as a receiver, the receiver of maybe a cosmic consciousness. This area of the brain becomes convinced that it is dead, it is deceased. And at that moment, it releases the consciousness of the individual. This is a completely unique psychotropic substance.
I'm sold already, man. Because the contrary, this is exciting.
Well, here's the takeaway point. I just want to leave you with this. When you've observed enough interviews with enough people, you always get a different story, but there are similarities.
Yeah.
And so you can create a model, if you will. Here's the model that I'd like to share with you. The consciousness is absolutely nothing at all like what our psychological models believe today. Because these people find themselves sometimes just, if they've only taken a small amount of the substance, they are suddenly the coffee pot in the other room looking back at themselves. And they have, they are literally a tile in the floor and convinced, you see, and they're actually seeing the world from that position.
The tile, oh my, right. There is a story I find interesting by G.K. Chesterton. He was like a sort of spiritual writer from the 30s and all. He had, was a famous Catholic convert who then wrote all these spiritual books and all. And one of his books, The Short Stories, has a story on that very premise. But a man, he was, it's kind of a fiction, but a man who was, had to be, he saw the man be very careful and loving and putting his hat up on the rack. He talked to this man who had had an experience when all of the things around him had talked to him, and that he became aware of the, there's consciousness.
It's life after life during life. I mean, it's like a fall to your tone, but we've probably covered this enough.
Yeah, but maybe one other thought that I have that you might find interesting. You remember the early Greek philosopher Heraclitus. Heraclitus, in talking about the people who had died and were revived, said, they are appointed to watch over the living and the dead, halfway beings. And I'm wondering if the people you're describing are kind of fit that category. Yeah, like the walkers between the worlds, I think is what the Greeks called.
Well, it certainly had an astounding impact on these folks, terrified them, mortified them, said it took months to fully integrate into their daily lives. And some describe realms that are, you know, we refer to as hell, others heaven. But for the most part, it was nothing at all like the, again, typical.
You come back from this transformed thinking that the purpose of the life we're in is to learn to love and to sort of go through some sort of progress. Yeah, so that's the scenario that I hear from people all over the world, thousands and thousands of people. I'll talk with you again soon, too, and thanks so much for the listeners, too. I hope they had a good time with this today. We're hoping to get our word about our University of Heaven out. Looking forward to talking with you again. Bye-bye.